This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 5, Episode 37, Playing Up and Out of Your Skin. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we help a young player who's moving up 3 levels in one game, and he wants to make sure that he makes the most of his opportunity when he plays up. We also help Mark with his calling of the players that he coaches and getting them to do a little bit better in that area. And speaking of help, we discuss the idea of self-help, whether it's mumbo jumbo or something you can use. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time once again for this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. If you want to play better cricket or if you want to coach better cricket, then prick up your ears for the next half an hour or so. We've got plenty to talk about when it comes to those particular topics. My name is David Hinchliffe, and I am joined on the line, as I always am, by the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garraway. We're back to the Skype. Face-to-face no more.
I know, it's such a disappointment to me, mate. It's it was a really nice thing to have you around last week.
It was lovely, yeah. And got lots of filming done, and keep them peeled for what's going to come up with some Mark Garraway tongue sticking out action.
What an embarrassment!
It's a great shot though, so I had to use it.
Mate, you could have caught me at any stage of a day and I think I'd have had that face on. That's a worrying thing.
Sitting at your desk.
If you're not, painting the walls.
If you're not sure what I'm talking about, by the way, head over to Twitter and have a look at the picture I last posted of Garris. And a man whose picture I have not posted this week is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavis.
Hello there, David. How are we?
Still,
all okay?
Still good, yeah. Still rocking and rolling. The hat is on the side of my head.
As always, as is common in South Wales.
As a jaunty angle, yeah, exactly. So we've all moved away from cricket in this part of the world. So we're starting to think about other things. And one of the things that has been a very popular topic on Pitch Vision Academy in recent times is kind of wider topics than just, you know, your basics of, you know, batting, bowling, fielding and that kind of thing. And I guess you can put a lot of it into the category of self-help, which is a bit of a loaded phrase, if you like. But, it, you know, the idea of success and learning and those broader issues that possibly you could apply to other things other than cricket. And some people say, oh, it's all a load of nonsense. And other people are really into it and they've got 27 different self-help books on the shelf. So I wanted to get your opinions on it, really. How much do we think that phrase self-help and the stuff that can come in that self-help category is useful for cricket? And how much is it a load of old nonsense?
Well, I think the benefit of it is it gives us perspective and maybe a different angle to attack an issue or a challenge or a problem or something that may come up in the future. So I'm a big believer in them, but also over the years of reading quite a lot of these books and listening now to quite a lot of the audio books, I've developed a system for really filtering out the things that are most relevant to me.
Yeah.
So when I read, I get my highlighter pen out, so nobody else would really like to read my book after that, and I'll highlight certain bits. And at the end of a book, I'll go back and I'll say, right, what are the 3 biggest lessons that I've got from that? What are the 3 most usable things? And in the front of a book with a normal pen, I'll put down the pages where those 3 most relevant points are. And I think a lot of self-help books have got a lot of volume in them, and there's a lot of repeatability from one book to the other. And so if you can sieve out 3 things from each book that you read, or bookmark, as we do nowadays, on Audible books and other such things, 3 bits for each book, then you're not going to go too far wrong. But it's very easy to get drawn into everything in the book, and then all of a sudden your world gets clouded again, which is the opposite of what it's trying to achieve in the first place.
Yeah, there can be a lot of hype and marketing around these kind of things, and you know, the people who come to them with the concept of I want to believe, and maybe you need to have a little bit more of a critical eye than just taking whatever book it is for itself.
Yeah, I think you can read them in different ways as well. Sometimes you might be reading something as purely as self-help that you're going to use for yourself, and sometimes you might be using something that you might be wanting to pass on to one of your players, And sometimes that does give you a different perspective in how you approach the book. Sometimes you can be investing into it and or not really committing to what you're doing because it's something that's you and it's something maybe you don't believe in. And sometimes you can just be analysing it critically as almost as a third party member and saying, well, do I really think this is going to help someone if I pass it on? And so the way you look at it can be skewed slightly depending on your approach. But if you do have that critical approach initially, I think you can sort of wean out what does work for you or what you feel could work for someone you maybe know quite well and what doesn't.
Yeah, and that critical eye is all important, isn't it? It's not just about deciding that whatever you read is going to be the absolute truth right from the first moment, but it's sort of taking a healthy skepticism, seeing how it fits into your current worldview and seeing what you, as you said, Gareth, what you can take from it.
I think that's crucial, and that's the same not just with self-help books, but I also think that's the same with coaching as well, isn't it? Because you look at the journey that a young player will go through their career from the age of 7 or 8, where they first come into contact with coaches, through to their early 20s, and they're likely to come across 15, 16 coaches in that journey, particularly if they progress up the player development models in their area. And not every bit of advice is going to be absolutely perfect for them, but along the way, all of those coaches will come up with one or two big things that are important to them. And it's a good habit to get into, having that critical view and narrowing things down so it works for you.
And often it can say a lot about you that you can pick up a book that perhaps you look at the cover of it and you think, this is going to be not much use to me, and there's probably nothing I'm going to be able to take from this, but you still pick it up and you read it anyway because you might find something that you didn't expect in there. And nobody ever gets more stupid by reading a book, do they?
One phrase I wrote down on reading that we were talking about self-help, and that was just give it an opportunity. And that's all I thought. I think there are people who will be very closed off to it. There'll be people who'll be actively seeking it, but I think give it an opportunity. If it doesn't work out, you've not, as you said there, you've not lost out. You've not got worse for learning something or reading about something, have you?
Yeah. Do you think there's a risk also, though, of getting bogged down? I mean, there's so much in that category of things, and it can range from very, very practical type books with a real sort of practical element to them, to the much more highfalutin type stuff. It probably, you could read them all and get something from them all, but can you also get bogged down and can you spend too much time thinking about these things and reading these things and lose sight of what you actually think? Is that a risk?
Oh, definitely. And I think we've all been there, haven't we? It's like when you go on coaching courses, you go there and you get all this information, and if you're anything like me, you'll go back into your environments and you'll just be so excited about it. You'll talk about everything on that course. But over a period of time, you then whittle those things down, and the things that are less relevant to you tend to disappear from your language and from your practice. And to me, it's exactly the same. And I think it's inevitable that we do get drawn into stuff that's current and around us. But over time, we find a way of filtering that out. And that's been the same for me when I read a book, to when I listen to a conversation, to when I go on a course. Or as of next week, up at the Elite Coaches Conference. So I'll go up there and I'll sit in all of the workshops. I've got to deliver on one, so I won't take any notice of that. But the other ones I will do, and I'm sure that I'll be coming back here and spouting about everything. And then over time, it will filter down, and eventually I'll take two or three things from it and hopefully make it part of my practice.
It's almost like you have your own top 10, don't you? Top 10 bits of information which will keep you on the path you want to be on. And as you bring in new bits of information, like Gareth said, they come into your top 10, and you have to decide what you're maybe going to cut and what you're going to keep. So, and it may be 10 things, it could be 5 things, it could be 30 things. It's obviously going to be different for everyone, but you filter them out. And as Gareth said, once you've tried them out, do they actually command a place in what I want to take forward in my life? And maybe some do, and maybe some don't.
Okay, so let me put you on the spot here. If you could pick one or two books that have helped you, they're not cricket related books. They can be applied to cricket, but they're not cricket related books that helped you or your coaching. What one or two books would you recommend that people read?
From my perspective, I would go with The Greatness Guide. which is a great book by, I'm trying to think of his first name. In fact, I'm trying to find it on my, it's by somebody Sharma.
Yeah, I've, that is, that'll come to me. No, it won't. Is anyone got Google to hand?
Robin Sharma, that's it. Steve Wilson, yeah. Assistant coach at Millfield School. Thank you for that interjection. Robin Sharma, great book. Incredibly simple messages. Absolutely brilliant. The other one that I really like is one by Gary Mack called Mind Gym, as in gymnasium, which is really good. And I like that a lot. And then the other one that made a big impact upon me was The Mental Game Plan years ago by my mentor, Mr. and actually Dr. Steve Ball. Here's another one. The Inner Game of Tennis by Tim Galway. Absolutely legendary. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Again, takes things down into a simple way that that people can relate to. And all about his experiences of being a professional tennis player and then going to work with old mums and stuff like that and trying to teach them how to play tennis and having to simplify it. It was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of them, isn't there? I think one that maybe is slightly overlooked, certainly in terms of a self-help book, is Getting Things Done by David Allen, which I've mentioned many times before. It's a system for managing your time, managing your projects, and managing those millions of different tasks that you have to do over the course of days and weeks and months. And staying on top of it, and as he puts it, having a mind like water, which is a nice analogy, and it helped me a great deal in being able to stay on top of things and be a lot more creative. And when you've got control over the practical stuff, the tasks and the jobs that you need to do, you've got space to be a lot more creative, and that is a really powerful book. It's only a short one as well, so I highly recommend it.
And that's one you do mention from time to time. You do drop that into conversations, don't you? So it is one that you actually lose quite a lot, I think, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. If you it's only a short book, and it's definitely worth sitting down and reading it. And if you only take one or two things from it, it will be transformative. But it's got a complete system in it, and you can use as much of that system or as little of it as you want, but if you go all in on it, it really does make a big difference to the way that you manage your time. Let's do the yes/no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. So I've got the questions. Let's fire away. KKR's winning streak shows you can play to a template and win.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Bring back the club kit bag.
No.
Absolutely no.
Third question. Put that tongue away.
Definitely.
I wish I could. Yes.
Time now for the questions section. We delve into the mailbag. We pick out a couple of questions and we answer those questions. The best one of the two that get asked wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the first question this week is from Dare. And Dare says, I'm a 14-year-old fast bowler and I bowl at 60 miles an hour. At the start of the season, I played for my club's sixth team and tomorrow I'm playing for the third team. Can you give me some tips for bowling to better batsmen? When I'm bowling, I always aim to hit the stumps, and better batsmen just hit it past me or over my head. And when I bowl back of a length, they cut and pull me for fours. Any ideas?
Yeah, I've got a few, actually. Great question. Absolutely brilliant. And well done on the progress that you've made in what seems like senior cricket, you know, which is fantastic. I mean, one of the challenges that you're going to have is obviously you're 14-year-old and you're playing against men. But I think I'd certainly be keen on you keeping the ball full and trying to hit the stumps. I think that's a massive virtue for you and something that I think you can be you can achieve. And then really, going back to lots of conversations that we've had on this show, it's making sure that your field is reflected by what you're trying to bowl and vice versa. So Stuart Broad's one of the best examples of people that have really good mastery over their fields, and whatever field that he's whatever tactic he's got in his head or line and length he's trying to hit, he makes sure that he's got cover and catches in the right places. So I would say, if I was working with you tomorrow or at the weekend when you're playing in the thirds and you're bowling up against some older batters that have been around the block and a bit more experienced, then I would ensure that my best fielders are in the high traffic positions, which sound as if you're going to pitch it up, then they're going to be straighter. So my extra cover, my straight mid wicket, my mid off, my mid on are my main fielders, as opposed to necessarily having them at slip or at a backward point. I'd encourage you to keep going for the stumps rather than trying to bowl back of a length, because adults are probably going to be okay at dealing with 60-mile-an-hour balls at back of a length. And I'd encourage people to drive and to defend off the front foot and to drive and make sure that I've got my fielders at the right depth, which gives me the best chance of a catch. And it's something, it sounds like a defensive tactic, but in fact it's nothing of the sort, and it's something a lot of the time that international sides from England, from Australia, from South Africa and various other parts of the world have to adopt when they go to places like India and Pakistan in particular, where the ball doesn't always bounce significantly and slips don't come into play so much. So even the top players at the game, and somebody that I thought had a brilliant record in test match cricket in the subcontinent was Matthew Hoggard, who you would say wouldn't be suited to those conditions, but all he did was straighten up his field, get his key fielders in straighter positions, and he'd bowl at the stumps and he'd swing it for a little bit, and when the shine went, he would just bowl arrow straight and keep encouraging people to play four defensive shots and keep encouraging people to drive, and those drives got him the wickets, as opposed to in the English conditions the nick to slip from length was getting him the wickets. So those would be my adaptations for you, and I'd say to you stick with your best, stick to hitting those stumps, stick to keeping the ball pitched up, and just deploy your fielders in the right places and get the right fielders in those high traffic areas and you'll be fine.
You almost have to think a little bit like a spinner, don't you? Just know that there's going to be times where someone's going to get on top of you, and that's par for the course, but as long as you stick to your plan and you know that you're making the batsman do as much as they can to make a mistake, then you're on the right track.
Definitely, and you can use those, that mid-off and mid-on fielder, you can adjust the depth of those. You don't have to just go on the one to on the boundary. You can do what a number of people are beginning to do now, have it three quarters of the way back, because a lot of players find it easier to hit the ball over the top than they do to try and keep the ball on the ground, and that's three-quarter position then becomes a real wicket-taking position, either at deep mid-on or deep mid-off. So you can play around with these, but the field just goes heck of a lot straighter. You might want to do something like Michael Vaughan did to Matthew Hayden in the 2005 Ashes, where he put somebody fielding on the catch right on the edge of a strip to Matthew Hoggard, basically said, right then, Mr. Hayden, against this newish ball, you can have a go at hitting it over the top of the bloke that's only sort of, you know, 10, 15 yards away, and almost trying to sort of goad Matthew Hayden's ego into making a mistake. But if you are consistent with your lengths and you bowl at the stumps, you can do that sort of thing. And what I find is it works in pitches that are low and slow and maybe a change from the norm of what you're normally used to. And secondly, as young players go up the player development model or go up the teams in a club, as you have from the sixth team to the third team, and obviously the batters get bigger, stronger and more experienced, you can use your consistency and the strength of the fielders around you to create wicket-taking opportunities.
Well, firstly, you must be going in with a lot of confidence. I mean, jumping from a sixth team to a third team is something that, selection-wise, no one would do unless they really believed in what you were doing. I think sometimes it's easy to go in thinking all these people are better than me, but you've been picked in a side for a reason, and that's because they feel you can do a job. So I'd be going in with confidence, first of all, and not be thinking I'm going to be daunted and worried about what could happen. So that's a great mindset to take in to start with. Secondly, I think you've just got to be quite comfortable with the role you're going to play. And obviously, given that you've been promoted from the sixth team upwards, you've obviously been playing quite a leading role in that side. And invariably, in playing a reading role, no doubt you're not going for many runs or taking wickets or a combination of the two, which is great. And sometimes now you can go into a higher level of cricket and almost expect the same things, almost be or be disappointed if you're not achieving things in the same way. And potentially you might just have to reassess your goals and your objectives for your six over spell or however many overs it might be, and think about what really do the team want me to contribute here. And that's where you can go and speak to your captain or a couple of senior players and say, and just sort of in this situation, what would work for me? Now, there are various things you can do to adapt yourself to the game, but the easiest thing to do is adapt the people around you rather than just having to try and bowl a completely different way. So as Gareth said, stick to what you know, stick to what you're good at, and let the more experienced players around you adapt to the way you're going to play. But making sure you know what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, and playing to them, and understanding the role you're playing in a team, which now might be just to simply try and go for a run a ball or less, as opposed to trying to be the guy who takes the new ball and takes five for at the top of the order, might just give you a little bit more confidence when you do go for six or seven off your first over. If that happens, then, well, that's what I've been asked to do, so I'm not too worried about it.
Next question is from Mark. And Mark's a coach, and Mark's got a detailed question about calling. He says, far too often, players do not use the correct three words for calling, yes, no, and wait, while batting. And I really need something which makes them use just those calls between two players, and also in real matches that builds up pressure on them. I really get annoyed at hearing things like right, hold it, go, come on, as they don't build confidence and understanding between the two batsmen, and nor do they put the fielding team on notice that they won't get a run out today. I've been toying with blindfolding players so that the partners have to give clear and concise calls to get the players from point A to point B, but to date haven't come with anything that actually incorporates cricket standards or actually works. So, do you kind gents have any thoughts on how those facets can not only be taught, but practice hard so they become second nature to everyone?
Good question.
Great question. Absolutely brilliant. And anybody who's read articles that I've written will know that this is a particular area that I look to try and develop within our young cricketers. And a lot of it is based upon awareness, really. And I don't necessarily think that it's a... it's always a calling thing, I'll come on to that a little bit more in a while. But to me, it's absolutely ludicrous, and it's great to have a question about running between the wickets, because generally the only time that we ever practice running between wickets is in a match. And if we were to look at any other aspect of cricket or any other aspect of sports coaching, to suggest that the only time that we would do any element would be under match conditions and often under match pressure, you'd think you're a bit bonkers. But this is what we generally do when we do running between the wickets. Now, a huge part of our program, particularly from January through to the start of the season, then including the season, is taking up trying to create runs and create runs through good calling, but also some other aspects of running between the wickets. So one of the challenges that I give our players is, can you be a world-class backer-upper? And by doing that, can you be aware? Can you communicate well enough? Can you be ready to go? Can you almost have some predefined singles that you're going to take as a backer-upper that you're going to create? And we monitor that. So we look at runs created or runs stolen and runs missed. And that's something that we do a lot of work on. But going back to the question, how do we train it? Obviously, we want to keep our communication, in particular around turning and around the start of and the initiation of any run, as simple as possible. And obviously, yes, no, and wait have been the traditional calls that we make. But almost to me, the most important bit of calling isn't and running between the wickets, are the eyes. And so many really good batters that have practiced out in the middle, that have built up a relationship over time, actually end up not calling, particularly on singles, very often, because they have an awareness. They might have said, right, if a ball goes off my pad, then we're going to go straight away. If a ball goes over there to that guy, we're going straight away. If I drop the ball in the crease, then that's what we do. And it's almost not a call. The pre-decision has been made. And I think there's a lot of work that we can do in nets by getting people to bat in pairs with field sets up on a magnetic board or on the wall or on an iPad or on a piece of paper, where we can start to develop those competencies, develop those partnerships, and not have to wait until we get out in the middle. Then obviously we've got the yes, no waits if that's required, but every call that we do has to be associated with eye contact, because if there's no eye contact, that's when confusion comes in, and often that's when the funny calls that you mentioned here, the goes and all of those sort of things start to come in, because the eye contact hasn't occurred and the eyes haven't met. So to me, it is, let's simplify our calling, but more importantly than that, let's have a real awareness of where we can steal runs off of each of our opposition. It doesn't change from game to game very often. The only thing that does change is maybe a right-handed fielder or a better fielder in a certain position than the side that you played previously. But ultimately, eye contact, work out your areas for scoring runs, and then simplify your calling and you'll be there. However, one great thing that you put in here, which is absolutely amazing, is the idea of blindfolding players. Now, I've never tried that, but it has got my mind thinking. So I thank you for that. I don't know where I'm going to take it, but I will give it a go if it's okay with you, Mark. And I'll let you know how I get on, because that should simplify our communication. We've seen that when we've blindfolded people in some team building exercises, that, you know, they're only governed by the simplicity and the conciseness and the clarity that you can develop in your communication. And I think that's a fascinating way to look at it. So watch this space on that one. But to me, it's eye contact, it's simplicity of calling, but also having some preordained areas that we get those singles. And also when we're running twos and threes, there's no harm in communicating whilst you're going past each other, as well as when you're 22 yards away from each other and you're going for a turn.
Yeah, that communication in the middle is so important. And we've talked about it a couple of times over the last few months. And just little words or little bits of conversations which are just, again, preparing you for what the outcome's likely to be when it comes to the call at the end of the pitch. So we don't want our partner being taken by surprise when you do push on for another run, or when you do say no because you're not quite up with them. So a little bit of communication at halfway, just to prepare them, just to make sure that they're aware of what's coming up. And what I want to go back to a couple of things that Gareth said. First of all, I think the idea of being a world-class backer upper is a great thing to try and install in people. We spoke previously about the idea of being the best third man you can be with a guy from Australia, I believe, who was found himself there and he was trying to get his way back into a different position in the field. And we said, well, just be the best you can of that. Everyone has a role they have to play. And if you're not on strike, do your job to the best of your ability, and that's running. And if you can be the best runner in the club, ultimately, the game is won and lost by runs. And if you can be the sort of guy that the top three go, well, I want him in my side because I enjoy batting with him because he runs very, very well, then that's another string to your bow. It's almost like thinking about your batting skills, your bowling skills and your fielding skills. And people say, well, he's a good batter and he can field a bit. Well, actually, he's a good batter and he can field a bit, and he's a great runner between the wickets as well. So that's another string that's going to add to your selection criteria that's getting you in that side. So that's a really good thing. I think the pre-planning is a great one, and Gareth has mentioned that, and just identifying in advance where the opportunities are, and having an automated response of if the ball goes here, we're taking off, we're going for that run. But the interesting part for me was Mark talked about blindfolding. I'd actually go the other way, and I'd go, rather than taking sight away, I'd look at taking sound away. And that emphasises the things we're looking for, which is the eye contact, the clear calling, and the simplifying communication. If you only have three words available to you in your main call, and they're yes, no, wait, and that's what we want to try and involve, or that's what Mark wants to encourage, then by taking sound away, we're automatically having to look and create eye contact and have simple, loud, clear calls, rather than having anything that's unusual and out of the ordinary. So that's something I think could be an option, is just take the sound away completely and see how people improve, or see how people react to the way they're going to communicate without the ability to actually hear each other. Obviously, they can still see each other's eyes and mouths, and
also that will increase their reliance on pre-planning what they're going to do, which again is going to be a benefit when it comes to a match situation.
It's Soapbox time on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. 60 seconds, one person, a rant about anything that they want. This week it's Sam Lavery. Hello, Labours, over to you.
Okay, so what I wanted to talk about today was just managing expectations when it comes to trials and how you prepare for them. So one of the things that I often get asked for is when people have trials coming up for a county or a district or maybe a regional side, they say, oh, let's get a one-to-one session in for whoever it may be, just to make sure he gets in. And I think people are misinterpreting the situation, which is a lot more complicated and a lot more difficult than it is. Getting yourself into a county side or getting yourself a contract or getting yourself into a regional side or wherever it may be is a much more long-term plan than that, and you have to play the long game. So if you are wanting to qualify or get into a county side or some sort of representative, think long-term. Think about how you're going to prepare, not in the day before, the week before, but let's think the 6, 8, 10 weeks, months, etc. Okay, it's a long-term plan. There's a bigger achievement at the end of it. Really plan for it as best you can.
And that is just about all we've got time for this week on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Before we go, though, we have the good news part of the show where we give away the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. We had Dare's question regarding how to move up when you're a young player, and we had Mark's question about helping young players with their calling. So, Gareth, which one did you prefer this week?
Well, it's a no-brainer, but that doesn't take away from Dave's question, which is awesome. Mark's question really hit what I like to see, which is looking at those 1, 2 or 10%ers, and running between the wickets is definitely one of those. So, Mark, this week you're the winner of the course.
Congratulations, Mark. And if somebody wanted to get in touch with the show and send in their question, Gareth, they can reach us in a number of different ways. What would be the best ways in your mind?
Well, I'd go with giving us a call on 0203 239 7543 or dropping us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
I would agree with that. And I would also add that you can tweet us on the Twitter at pitchvisionacad, and you can find us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to listen to this show every week, you can do so. And the way you can do that is by firing up your favourite podcast program. Maybe it's in your brand new iPhone, or maybe it's in your rubbish old Android, or anywhere in between. You can find us in pretty much any one of those podcast catching programs. And you can also use the RSS feed if you want to go old school. If you go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link, you can find all the details in there. And that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Labours. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, boys.
Thanks, guys.